Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 15th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. So, D.R., there's lots of interesting items to knit together into a perspective tonight. Let's just begin with the kind of a sad anniversary. It was 4 years ago this week that the Fukushima, well, actually, it was the earthquake offshore and the tsunami that hit the Fukushima power plant, right, which set Japan back on its heels for a while. That was 4 years ago. In the interim, Japan shut down all of its nuclear power plants. They're trying to make a comeback, but there's an article I read that said there were lots and lots of solar panels now in Japan, really been embraced by the Japanese. But that TEPCO, which is the Tokyo Electric Power Company, right, that was the guys who ran the Fukushima plant, I think are not very happy about accepting the solar power because it messes up their grid. And I just wanted to comment that I think that's similar to arguments you hear in the United States, right? And I think the story, the reason this is true is because, so everyone knows that you have 60 hertz frequency on the power that comes out of your wall, right? So the electric company has to make that voltage go up and down at 60 hertz. When you get power from a solar panel, it has to go through that little thing called an inverter, which actually makes the electricity from your solar panel go up and down at 60 hertz. But that is not, it's not synced up with the electricity that the power company provides. So all of a sudden you have this mismatch, and you know, you got one thing waving at one time and the other power varying at a different time, different phase, and that screws things up. Companies in the United States don't like that. TEPCO doesn't like it. But for my money, that is an excuse. It's a problem that's got to be solved, and we expect that to be resolved. So that's just an anniversary. Really, what I wanted to talk about was the fact that there were two movies that have come out within the last week or so. Both of them we think are somewhat consequential. The first, and one that I am less familiar with, in fact, I have not seen either of these movies, but I've read a fair amount about them. One is over in China, and it's called Under the Dome, which is a reference to the Stephen King novel that you may or may not have read, if you're a Stephen King fan. In this case, the dome they're referring to is the pollution over Beijing, and it's done by a woman producer who is recording her life and the life of her family in Beijing with all the pollution and essentially the corruption behind it. Have you seen any of that, DR? You see everything, but were you able to catch this one?
I haven't seen it yet. I did see the story that was reported in the March 7th edition of the New York Times, noting that all of a sudden it disappeared from major Chinese video websites, apparently under orders from the Communist Party of China, and apparently it's now what I think they call in countries samizdat, I think in the name of the term, which is basically something that is not sanctioned by the government, and you have to sort of distribute it underground. Essentially,
that's an old Soviet term, right?
Exactly.
But I think the interesting thing was they pulled it down because there was something like 200 million people had seen it, or some incredible number of it went viral, right?
Yeah.
In the I don't know what the Chinese word for viral is, but it went. Everyone started seeing it, and I guess too many people started seeing it, so the Chinese government pulled it off the internet. So if you're interested, it's like an hour and a half movie. You can still find it out there. It's called Under the Dome. As I say, it's probably an interesting movie to see. The other movie, though, is much closer to home. It's a movie called Merchant Merchants of Doubt, and it is based on a book by a woman named Naomi Oreskes, who is a historian of science and is quite accomplished. So this book, the movie is based on the book, and the book basically details how do I say this? It exposes the industry that thrives on producing scientific confusion about many things, right? So the classic example that people are aware of is smoking, cigarette smoking. Right? So many people will remember the efforts of the cigarette companies to avoid regulation, to basically confuse the issue about whether or not cigarettes cause cancer. There's that. There have been other examples since then, many other examples since then, but most of these people nowadays are engaged in the climate denial business. Same techniques of ad hominem attacks. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago, about the PR guy who just confuses the issue by making ad hominem attacks against scientists, by having this echo chamber of nonprofits that all make their presentations. So that's what it's about. It's important for people to understand what is going on that's trying to convince them of something. And there's this effort to convince them that there's doubt about climate. But the other important point that Naomi Klein makes in her book, which I think is reflected in the movie, is the idea that much of the opposition to regulation about climate change, or much of the denial of the science, is driven by fear of Soviet-style economic regulation. And what comes up again in the movie is this idea of a quote-unquote watermelon as an insult to environmentalists by saying they're green on the outside but communist red on the inside, and that the real goal of the environmental movement is to capture the market, enslave the free market, and turn us all back into a Soviet-era, command economy. And that's what gets them worked up. And that's what the real battle is about. The battle over the science is just kind of a proxy for that other fight. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense to you, DR? Does that, where do you come down on that front?
Well, I've yet to see the movie. I read the book in 2011, and it was a brilliant book and one of the best books I've ever read. And Naomi Oreskes is a hero for exposing this sort of cult of personality that is, you know, science denial. And the people she's exposed have gone after her for years and have trashed her for years. In fact, there was a report in dsmogblog.com and theguardian.com earlier this week talking about how some of these members of this cult of personality of science denial tried to coordinate a legal strategy to either stop the release of the film or to somehow take some sort of legal action to sort of, you know, tie up the director of the film in Naomi Oreskes. The strategy as of yet has not resulted in legal action, but it's resulted in a lot of smearing of the director, another attempt at smearing Naomi Oreskes. And just basically, you know, these agents of malevolence, you know, who don't like the scrutiny, are once again just launching the usual personal attacks because they don't have anything other than personal attacks and insults and smears.
By delegitimizing the messenger, you win, right? If they can turn someone like Naomi Oreskes into a figure of mockery, they've won.
I would argue it works only on gullible people and people who are you know, have sort of ideological blinders on. I think that people who look at Naomi Oreskes objectively can recognize that what she's done is that she's exposed this sort of subculture of sleaze and deceit. But if you're wired in a certain way to view somebody like Oreskes as some sort of, you know, crypto commie, you're going to regard her as some sort of villain, and basically that's what's going on here.
Well, so there's the Merchant of Doubt movie right now. My understanding is that here in the Boston area, it's playing in Kendall Square. I hope that it gets a wider distribution. I think that many of these movies, these smaller movies, they put them out in a few places. If they get a reaction, then they expand the. the audience. But both of those movies, both the Chinese movie and the Merchants of Doubt, have the potential to be something like the Al Gore movie, We Can Only Hope. But tell me, speaking of confusion and censorship and things like that, tell me the story about what Governor Rick Scott did down in Florida.
Well,
what do people need to know about that? Let me put it that way.
Well, there's a great story that was released on March the 8th in the Miami Herald. It was put together by the Florida Center for Investigative Research, revealing that since 2011, since Governor Rick Scott of Florida took over in 2011, he has effectively prevented the Florida Department of Environmental Protection and other Florida governmental agencies from even using the terms climate change or global warming in official reports or emails or documents. They're forced to use euphemisms, and essentially there is a unwritten rule, a literally unwritten rule, but apparently a verbal rule, saying that you cannot make reference to global warming or climate change in any capacity. Governor Scott has vociferously denied this in a way that frankly reminds me of Bill Cosby in terms of his denials.
You doth protest too much. Isn't that what Shakespeare
said? But there are so many people coming forward and saying that this was the unofficial policy and the unwritten rule that it becomes obvious as to what is going on. And I believe it was thinkprogress.org reported earlier this week that, you know, similar policies were in existence in North Carolina and in Pennsylvania for many years of simply, you know, not acknowledging things. It reminds me of that.
Well, I mean, DR, it's very insidious. So if you're in the environmental department of some state and your boss comes to you and says, do not use the word climate change in anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing written down. Right. But you know, right? And that's why it's so scary. So now Rick Scott can deny he ever said that or there was no official policy. Yeah, but everyone got the word literally. Mm-hmm. So I think it's people should know that this level of antipathy and distortion is going on, right?
Mm-hmm. It's literally a code of silence going on in Florida, and what a profound in the state that's going to be the most ravaged of all the United States, the most ravaged by human caused climate change, to have this level of denial is just
so John Kerry got up and he made a speech. You were telling me before, Kerry, what did Secretary of State, former Massachusetts State Senator John Kerry, have to say?
Yes, there was a speech that Kerry delivered to the Atlantic Council in Washington D.C. on March the 12th, where he in part condemned what was going on in Florida and basically said that you know we don't have the time to get into debates over whether or not to use the word climate change. What we have the time to do and what we must do is to get into the discussion of solutions to climate change. And in the speech, Kerry also criticized the denialism industry that is at the focus of Merchants of Doubt. It was a very strong and, I thought, very impassioned speech in which Kerry, you know, made it clear that we have to address this issue and that this is the issue that, if not addressed, is going to overwhelm all other issues.
At the 32-minute mark...
Then at the 32-minute mark, he made a remark implying very, very subtly that the notorious Trans-Pacific Partnership might help us get, towards a clean energy future. And that just seems to be a complete contradiction in terms of what we've discussed in previous weeks about how the Trans-Pacific Partnership would allow special interests to basically gut environmental laws. And it was like one of these sort of contradictions or sort of one of these things where you wonder if Kerry was speaking to an audience that didn't really know the full implication of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or if Kerry in his own mind thinks that the prospects of environmental laws being sabotaged by the TPP is low. It was just an odd, strong speech.
What his justification was? I mean, what's his rationale? I mean,
it was just a very, very quick line.
It's
sort of like almost like a drive-by line where basically it suggests that the TPP might help things. But it's for those of us who recognize the flaws of the TPP, it was a line that we weren't buying.
Right. Well, it turns out that the TPP is coming close to some sort of vote in the Congress. We've got a couple of clips we'll put up of various senators, I believe, opposing it. In fact, I saw one. I didn't. There's so much news that comes through. I can't review everything in detail. But there was a clip of Elizabeth Warren, I think, speaking about the TPP. I'm gonna
Yes.
try and put that up as well. But the real action, if you're listening, is to call your congressman or woman and tell him or her that you don't want the TPP. You don't want to fast track the TPP. Boy, that's a mouthful. So then the other
In
thing
fact,
is,
we want a very, very slow track to the
we want a very
TPP.
slow track.
Very, very slow.
In
So
fact,
slow that it stops.
yes. I guess the other interesting thing is that this past week there's been continuing discussion about the fallout from Willie Soon. So we talked about Willie Soon a few weeks ago. He is a now embarrassed and exposed scientist who has been claiming to be unbiased when in fact he's collecting money from oil interests to publish papers that are favorable to the oil industry. Then it turned out that a congressman, Mr. Grijalva, I think his name is, from
Raul Ruavo of Arizona.
somewhere, from somewhere in New Mexico, I think.
Oh,
He,
Arizona, actually.
Arizona, he was going to now start an investigation of Willie Soon and several other sort of climate denier scientists, which then brought another turn of the screw where everyone says, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, we don't want a witch hunt. And I think, DR, you and I spoke last week that we also agree that we do not want to have a witch hunt. We don't want to confuse the exposing of bad science from attacking individuals. I guess there's a long way of getting around to the point that on NPR this past week, there was a story where all of a sudden NPR was worried about what was Mr. Grijalva doing to Willie Soon. And I guess I was irritated because other legitimate climate scientists, in particular a guy named Michael Mann, was dragged over the coals by the climate deniers. It was all, lawsuits. They wanted him thrown out of the college he teaches in. They were trying to get all of his information. And no one mentioned a word then, right? But now when some climate denier guy, all of a sudden NPR has got to stand up and start protecting. I just wish NPR had gone public with the Michael Mann story when it was happening. Am I crazy, DR?
No, and in fact, Eric Wemple of the Washington Post called out NPR in a February 12th, in a March 12th post, basically for engaging in false balance and suggesting that there is a comparison between what Representative Grijalva is doing and what the attackers of Michael Mann were doing. And Eric Wemple pointed out very accurately that there are two dramatically different things, and that this appeared to be once again NPR embracing the false god of false balance instead of reporting what the actual facts are. But of course, as we've discussed previously, considering NPR's, shall we say, playing patty cake over the years with the fossil fuel industry, think about it, as the old advertising on NPR goes, this shouldn't be that much of a surprise that they're engaging in the politics of false balance with regard to Mr. Soon.
Yes, I mean I listen, I mean I listen to NPR a lot, and I generally speaking like it. But and I hope all of the people listening to the show, when you're listening to NPR and that voice comes on and says, think about it dot, think about it dot org, if just take that as a reminder that they're getting money from the natural gas people and a lot of it. And so what consequence does that have for their coverage?
When you hear them say, think about it, say to yourself, what the frack?
You say, I am thinking about it, and I don't like it very much. Anyway, DR, we gotta quit. Once again, it's been fun. Of course, you can let me remind everyone that you can find links to what we've talked about here at the blog. It's a Facebook, it's a WordPress blog, massclimateaction.wordpress.com. You can catch up with us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us everywhere. DR tweets at DR Tucker. It's a good thing to follow. So we'll close the way we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.